Economic Development Division. The we have House File 3029 in possession of the committee, and we will take testimony on that bill today. However, we have not set targets yet for this bill, so we'll take testimony today, and then we'll do final action once an official target has been announced. So, Representative Eklund, welcome to the committee, and why don't you give us a brief overview, and then we'll go to the testifiers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. House File 3029 is a continuation of my project on working on broadband for border-to-border broadband for the state of Minnesota. $40 million in last year's budget was a strong investment, but we fell short of the $70 million of governor's request from the Broadband Task Force. Last year, investment was only 57% of the recommended funding necessary to stay on track to meet our state's goals. This bill puts us on track to achieve the state's 2022 goals of reaching every home and business with a broadband service that can deliver speeds of at least 25 megabytes by 3 megabytes, which is the FCC's minimum definition of for broadband today. Ongoing sustainable funding for the grant program allows communities more time to develop a plan and complete a grant application that fits their needs. Access to robust broadband is now recognized as a critical factor in the economic and social sustainability of all of Minnesota communities, and there are places in the states that still in the state that still don't have it. Minnesota has been recognized as a national leader on broadband expansion, but we risk being outpaced by our neighbors unless we continue to invest. Wisconsin spent $48 million for broadband in their last budget, and Illinois recently invested $400 million to begin their broadband expansion program. So that, Mr. Chair, I have there's quite a few people here to testify on the merits of this bill, and so I can stop there. And other than saying it's a good bill.
This bill differs from your previous bills in how we're allocating the money. Can you explain on line 1.7 the underlying how this bill functions differently from previous bills?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. That's a great question. Last year was a one-time budget appropriation or split over 2 years. What we're attempting to do here is get $30 million into the base for ongoing funding.
All right. So just to clarify, if this is $30 million for ongoing funding, the target really isn't $30 million then, because ongoing funding means we have to fund it in both years in order to keep it ongoing funding. So I would hope that the testifiers, when they testify, would speak to the bill and why that amount is needed for that period of time. I'm not arguing that it isn't, but I think it would be good to clarify at what point will we get everybody to that level in the state. So if the testifiers could add that to their testimony, it would be appreciated. So thank you, Representative Eklund. First on the list is Angie Dickinson. Welcome to the committee. Oh, and Diane Wells, both. I'm sorry. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Good afternoon. My name is Angie Dickinson. I'm with the Office of Broadband Development at DEED.
Diane Wells with the Office of Broadband Development at DEED.
Okay. Proceed.
Well, good afternoon. As we said, my name is Angie Dickinson, and I'm with Diane Wells. We are here representing the Office of Broadband Development that is located within DEED. Mr. Chair and members, thank you for dedicating this time to take a deeper dive on broadband programs and issues. Our office hears about the importance of this issue daily as we receive calls from communities and the public seeking answers and help finding better broadband options in their areas. We were asked to give you a general overview of the state's broadband policy and programs, along with a snapshot of where we are at today. We are also happy to answer more detailed questions during the Q&A. This timeline slide is included so that you have some of the historical context of the broadband policy development in Minnesota. I would note two things about this slide. The first is that the work has been going on for some time, starting back in 2008 and even earlier. The second important point about this slide is that Minnesota's policy and programs have been adopted incrementally and iteratively. Each step has been taken after careful consideration of the new information gathered during the previous step. This has led us to the four elements of an approach that we now have in place today and that is known across the country as the Minnesota model. This slide shows the four tiles that make up Minnesota's broadband policy and program work. When we are asked about the state's broadband plan, we talk about how it is deliberately high level and dynamic in order to respond to changing conditions and the unique combination of variables that exist in each region of our state. The first element to consider are the state broadband goals. These goals set a compass point for all of our work. There are two speed goals set in statute for the years 2022 and 2026, along with goals to be national leaders in both the access and use of robust broadband. The second component is the data and mapping program. This work allows our office and others to measure progress toward the goals, identify gaps, and check for any need for program realignment to address evolving needs and conditions across the state. The third piece provides a focal point and guidance. The broadband office with Indeed gives us a place from which to support communities and the providers doing the work to deploy broadband and make sure we are leveraging those investments to the fullest extent possible. The other work of the office will be covered in the next slide. The other entity on this tile is the Governor's Task Force on Broadband, which brings together a diverse group of broadband stakeholders to provide guidance on broadband policy going forward. Finally, the grant program was created in 2014 and gives us a tool to materially participate in and collaborate on the solutions to close the gap. The gaps exist because of a business case cannot be made to deploy broadband to these high-cost areas. This next slide is meant to be a reminder that our office does many things outside of the grant program. I won't read the whole slide to you. Just want to note that there are some items that are important, and I'd like to touch on those now. Many of these take the form of cross-agency collaborations, whether that is with the Department of Education on measuring and understanding connectivity to our schools, working with MnDOT on permitting and right-of-way issues related to timely deployment of new broadband service, or with the staff of the PUC on how the federal Lifeline program can be used to help more low-income families subscribe to broadband in their homes. And I'll turn it over to Diane.
Good morning, or afternoon, I guess. I'll talk about the mapping program and the grant program. So this next slide, and you should probably be familiar with these, are updates of data that we've collected over the past several years. And it shows where we stand in relation to the state's broadband goals. The red and orange and blue map shows that we're making progress overall. It points us towards the counties that may need some additional attention and possibly new strategies to get them to a baseline level of service and hopefully higher. As you can see, Lake of the Woods, Lincoln, Marshall, and Pine counties show up in dark orange as areas where more progress needs to be made. Just over 50% of the homes in those counties have access to broadband at the minimum speed definition of 25 down and 3 megabits up. The map on the right shows us that some areas are making progress towards the 2026 goal of having a network in place that will support their long-term future. But there is still ground to cover before that goal comes due, and those are highlighted by the yellow counties. The next map should also be familiar to those that have tracked our work over time, and this is the pink and purple map that shows us in a much more granular fashion where service exists and where the unserved areas are located. We gather this data annually from approximately 115 broadband providers that serve the state. And the data behind this map leads to an estimate of about 152,000 homes and businesses that don't yet have access to the 2022 goal, and about 293,000 homes that don't yet reach the 2026 target.
Ms. Wells, can I just interrupt you for a second for a question? Mm-hmm. There's been an issue raised that it is not lucrative for some of the vendors to participate in the program because it's frankly too expensive to put the broadband in place. So at this number, is it going to be lucrative enough for those vendors to put the broadband in those areas where apparently it was not lucrative for them to do it.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we have had potential applicants tell us that the 50% max that the state grant program allows isn't going to be enough to get into some of the high cost areas. What we tried to do with this grant round is really encourage a third source of funding, which makes the money go farther and can help if we have a township do bonding or a county do bonding or putting in revenue from other sources, so that the match can be higher. And if we the state still puts in the 50%, then we can fund projects that might be 12 or 13 or 14 million dollars to get to an area.
So Ms. Wells, where would that match come from?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the state can fund up to 50% or $5 million, and then the other portion of the match would come from the provider, or we have townships that are doing bonding, we have counties that are putting in funding. We had Otter Tail and Aiken County both put in match to any application that came from their county. I mean, the other way to do it would be not to do a huge project, but to focus on the township level or smaller neighborhoods.
Okay, thank you. Representative Mahoney.
If I may, if you start to take this down too small in terms of size of a provider, don't you kind of knock down the piece that I really thought was much more important than all the other stuff that we've been talking about, but is that people can use it at their home, because townships are never entirely, you would never do the whole township in with a broadband kind of deal. And I'm trying to stop the kids having to park their car outside the city or county library. So does that hinder that spread of the broadband when you start putting in more than the state and the provider?
Ms. Wells.
Does that start hindering how big this network is getting?
Ms. Wells.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, when the companies do their network design, they obviously will only design to where there is a structure to subscribe to the broadband service. So I guess I'm not quite understanding your question. They'd only bill to the portion of the township that actually has subscribers or potential subscribers in it. And then you may want to ask a couple of the testifiers that are coming up later are companies that do this. But what we're seeing from some of our providers is as they get into an area, then they edge out. And so then once the edge out is done, then they edge out again. So as long as it's contiguous, it makes sense to build out. Does that answer your question?
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Yeah, that actually is, and I should have realized that they would be doing that continuously, but I'd like some information from one of the testifiers at some point. How fast is that moving? Is that just using it to get their initial, and then it takes forever to get the rest of it back up, so that if somebody comes out 2 miles outside of the township, how soon before they actually are going to get service at their home? Because it's not just their school age or shopping or anything else, it's how they're going to run their business, how they're going to, you know, download the right to repair at some point.
Ms. Wells, you want to respond or just proceed?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, there's not an overnight solution to this issue. I mean, we know with the next program that the FCC is rolling out, the RDOF, which they hope to have the auction before the end of the year, that's a 10-year funding program with the build-out expected to be over 6 to 8 years. We have some of our ACAM funding that's been awarded to our rate of return companies that goes through, I believe it's 2026 or 2027. So it is going to take a while, and that's why we look to services like maybe you're going to have to use a cellular hotspot or a satellite service in the interim.
All right. Why don't you proceed?
Okay. Thank you. The next map is another way that we've used our data and what we've determined our what we call gigabit cities. So you can see we have 496 cities that have at least 25% of their homes with access to gigabit service. That's up 50 cities from last year and from 286 cities in 2017. And again, these are towns, so they're easier to serve with a concentration of homes in one area. The next map is a map showing the opposite side, the unserved Minnesota cities. And you can see that we have 62 cities that still have more than 50% of their residents without that base 25x3 service. But again, the numbers show that we went from 186 towns 2 years ago to 62 this year, so that's more positive change. We also know that a few more will be coming off the list with our next data collection, as they are a part of grant awards. That would be Ferrara, Renville, and the town of Watson are examples of that. Or in response to the pre-application or challenge process that we conducted with the most recent round, we know that providers have upgraded or have plans underway to build out towns like Amboy, Good Thunder, Mapleton, Orinoco, Ostrander, Sargent, St. Clair, and Vernon Center.
Excuse me, one. Representative Lehman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this might be an appropriate time for my question when we're talking about the unserved. First of all, I'm a co-sponsor of the bill, so just to reframe the context of this. Things have changed over time. We have a state broadband speed right now, but we're upping that for a goal for 2026, so it's a greater speed. And then we have people who don't have any speed that we're looking at here, the unserved. And then we have the complexity of how can they matching funds and so on. So my question maybe for all of us to understand is, when you get all these applications in every year, who gets top priority? How, I mean, do you say, okay, we're gonna hit the unserved first, or what's the mix of that? And I mean, I can imagine you're gonna go to the unserved and maybe it's because there's no provider, so there's nobody there, you know. So can you just answer that? How do you go about your business of deciding who gets the grants, who gets top billing? Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lehman, we have a scoring rubric for our grant program, and we absolutely give the highest scoring to projects that are serving unserved areas of the state and the number of locations that are served. The other element of how we award grants has to do with a requirement in statute that those grants be distributed across the state. So that may lead to projects that are serving underserved areas being funded as we're meeting our requirement to distribute those funds. So to answer your question, the funds don't necessarily all go to serve the unserved areas first. If the applications we receive all end up being in one particular area of the state. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, it does. So you do have a priority as
yes.
part of your mission to get the whole state kind of on the same level.
Correct.
So you're gonna not all go to northwestern Minnesota, you're gonna try to spread it around. So you might be going to some underserved areas. Okay, where in the mix are the people who maybe are meeting or close to meeting the state broadband goals now, but they want to have better service because they have maybe an economic opportunity that if they had this better service, they could meet that opportunity?
Ms. Dickinson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lehman, so the scenario you describe would be an underserved area more than likely. So that area would be eligible for funding under our program. There are other elements that we look at in terms of scoring applications, but certainly looking at those unserved areas first and then the impact in terms of the number of locations in those unserved areas.
Okay, and Mr. Chair, if I could have one more question and then I can have all my questions answered. And I'm sorry if I missed this, because I apologize for coming in a little bit late. Maybe you covered this. I like the idea that we're looking at a bill that says you don't have to come back again and again and again, that we're doing this each year. So the big question is, until when?
Ms. Dickinson or Ms. Wells, who's going to answer that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lehman, Governor Walz appointed a broadband task force last year, and it's our recommendation in terms of looking at the timing and the cost to achieve the state's goal, that work continue through the governor's broadband task force and their annual recommendation. My understanding was their last report was what led to the budget proposal and for funding this program over the last 2 years, and I would rely on that group. It's a diverse group of stakeholders there representing both broadband advocates and the industry, and I think they're best suited to put together that updated estimate. There is an estimate in the 2019 report from the task force where they recommended $30 million in annual funding until the work was completed. And I know that it is on the agenda of the task force to look at updating that estimate.
Representative Lehman.
Okay. I'm anxious to get that report, and so I imagine the governor is as well, and so we'll be hearing that report when it comes due. I think that's important. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and that does bring up a point. I thought we'd save that about the wording of this bill. If it's intended to be base funding, I'm not sure if it's worded quite correctly, but we'll save that. But my original question, Representative Lehman talked about the goal of the program to be covering the entire state. But it would seem to me that eventually we're going to have the areas served that make financial sense for companies to do these programs with a 50-50 match. What's the end game in terms of for the areas that have so low a population, and it doesn't make sense financially for a company to do that with the current state match? How are we going to serve those people when we get to that point?
Ms. Dickinson? Or Ms. Wells?
Mr. Chair, Representative Barr, that's a very good.
Anderson.
Anderson, I'm sorry. My apologies, Representative. I'm giving you my opinion. It very well will take an adjustment to that 50% match requirement to serve those hardest to reach areas. The areas that remain are most likely the most difficult to not only construct networks in, but the population density is so low that it's cost prohibitive, and we've heard that from providers and from folks in those communities. So my thought is, yes, it's going to take an adjustment to that 50% matching requirement in those hardest to serve areas.
Okay. Representative Lislegaard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You may have just answered it, but some of the communities in Greater Minnesota, they don't have the wealth to match. So how are you going to address that? Because if they can apply, but if they don't have the money to match, regardless if another company wants to come in there, there won't be no economic growth. Representative Lehman, certain areas have wealth and they can do the match, but others can't. So how are you going to address that?
Ms. Dickinson or Ms. Wells?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lislegaard. Thank you. I had that discussion when I went up to town, talk to the township supervisors in Mille Lacs County. Right now by law, we can do a 50% match. So if the provider is willing to come up with 50%, maybe you have to start with an area and not do an entire county at a time, so that you've got a provider willing to do an area, or you start, like I explained before, with a populated area, and then once you've got network there, and when we work with our providers, we tell them put in as fat of a pipe as you can so that it's ready to go to do that next edge out. So once you get into an area, then it makes it cheaper to do that edge out. But again, some townships have found with bonding, if you can do a 20-year bonding and have $120 extra on your property taxes for the year, that helps make it affordable, and that's an amount that's affordable to the people that are going to actually be saving on their monthly bill by not having to pay those high costs of a mobile hotspot or a satellite service.
Representative Lissiger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll just make a comment. I mean, I just don't want the disparity where the, you know, the wealthy or the wealthier communities, they get it because they're the only ones that can afford the grant. So please take into consideration.
Ms. Dickinson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lissigard, I also want to let you all know that as we're scoring these applications, so in the last grant round, we encouraged that community participation in funding. We gave every applicant the scoring points for having some form of local matching funds, regardless of the amount. With that very thought in mind, our office absolutely has a rural focus and an understanding of the issues there, and we will continue to do that. So thank you.
Representative Gunn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I thought it was phone companies that make this match with the state and not jurisdictions like townships or counties. There's a town in the county I live in, Donnell. They got a grant. They were owned by a Texas firm who asked the question, how many people in your phone system are going to take this high-speed broadband and how many aren't? And they came up with 19 customers. Their share of the cost was $660-some-thousand to pay their half for 19 customers. It was not feasible. So it's a phone company that makes this decision, not a township or something like that. So in that township or that phone system, there weren't enough people that had an interest in doing that, and the cost would have been so prohibitive, they didn't want it. Now, when we have less dense populated areas, you're gonna find that's true unless we change the game. And once you change the game, all the people that just paid for it are going to be mad because they had to pay for it. So any way you look at it, you're going to be wrong. I think you got to use a little reason somewhere. I would love to see everybody have high-speed broadband to the degree that the best phone system in the world has. But it's not feasible, not realistic. And I've known phone companies that the guy that owned the phone company sat across and had coffee with the person that wanted it very bad. And he funded it himself. And that person was a very progressive phone, had a very progressive phone company, but eventually he had to sell to the next biggest one, which could absorb those costs and spread their risk much better. So there's some people just aren't going to get it unless we have a national rollout or something. We could be like Nebraska. They went and paid for everything right up front, and it was all done all at once. So there's in today's broadband situation, we aren't going to get all these small areas with less dense populations.
Representative Lee, do you want an answer? Or
no.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To either of you, if you care to answer this, I would imagine maybe the industry folks would have something to say about this. Can wireless applications help this issue with very rural, not densely populated areas getting the high-speed internet? I understand we still need the fiber cable to get to the tower or whatever to send the signal out, then you know, as areas grow, you would possibly need more towers to keep the bandwidth and everything. But I mean, is that a possible solution for some of these more rural, less dense areas?
Ms. Dickinson or
Mr. Chair, Representative Lean, the short answer, yes. Our program is agnostic to technology type as long as whatever the technology is can deliver the minimum speeds required by our program and can scale to that 100 by 100 symmetrical speed. We have funded fixed wireless projects through our program in the past, and like I said, we're looking to any technology that will help us achieve our goals and that meets the needs of the local community.
Ms. Wells, did I hear you correctly when you said if the township was floating a bond effort, it might be as much as $120 in property tax increases?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. That's one example of one of the townships that participated in the program and was one of the three legs of the funding. They're doing bonding in the township, and the bonds are being repaid on the property taxes, and my understanding is it's about $120 a year for 20 years, or they had the option of a lump sum amount up front.
Ms. Wells, then they would still have to pay the internet fee on top of that, correct?
Mr. Chair, yes, that's true, but if they have a satellite service now, they're probably paying $150 a month for that or over $100 a month for a mobile hotspot for their internet use, both of which have data caps, whereas if they can get a wired service, that can, I think CenturyLink's got a promotional price for like $80 for gigabit service a month, so they're going to save that in a year.
Ms. Wilson, and I know you're using examples, but an increase in property taxes in some areas of the state, people watch their property taxes very closely, and that would be a sizable increase per household. So I don't think you'd get too many areas that you would find the township or any entity being able to do that. All right, proceed.
All right. The next set of slides turn to the grant program, and the purpose is to provide that financial assistance for the acquisition and installation of middle mile and last mile service. And this slide has some of the allowable costs. As we've discussed, the grant program is by law only able to provide up to 50% of the costs to build the broadband infrastructure. So ongoing costs like customer service and billing, those are not costs that are covered by the grant program. Next, we just have some of pictures of what it takes to install that broadband infrastructure, going from the war room in the upper left to digging fiber cabling through a swamp up in northern Minnesota. The next slide is some of the highlights is that the grant program has been funded with general fund appropriations in 6 out of 7 years from surplus funding. We distribute it in a single competitive grant round. The technology has to be scalable to 100 meg up and down. There is that cap of $5 million per award. There is at least a one-to-one match required, and we do award higher points if you come in requesting less than 50%. We have to geographically disperse, and we do require that the speeds offered must achieve 25 by 3. Many of the projects we've awarded achieve that 2026 goal, and some are gigabit speed. The next slide just discusses who's eligible to apply, and that's been consistent over the years of the program. Next is a list of some of the things we look at in scoring, and I think Ms. Dickinson covered that with Representative Lehman as to what we look at. One thing I would mention based on some of the questioning is that we do look at and award points if the provider has a low-income discount program to help people afford the service if they are low-income. Okay. One question we often get is how we coordinate with federal broadband investments and how they relate to the state program. We have layers on our interactive map where federal funds are being invested, and we factor that information into every project evaluation. State-funded projects only go where there are no existing projects budgeted for or underway that meet or exceed the state's speed goals. And in some cases, there have been projects done in partnership with local and federal funds in order to get faster service to an area or service to an area sooner. And I'd also note that we also partner with providers or the federal government on projects. I just did a draft letter for the governor's signature this morning for an applicant that's going to apply to the USDA for their ReConnect program this year. So hopefully that company got an award last year. And so we encourage and work with other sources of funding out of the office as well. Next slide is the results of the $20 million appropriation for fiscal year 20 that were announced in January. So this slide provides information on those awards. The application period opened in July, and the applications were due in September of 2019. Our office received 80 applications requesting $70 million in grant funding. We were able to award 30 projects totaling $23.2 million. And that was matched by $35.9 million in local and private funding. So the leverage was pretty good on these projects. And the right-hand side of that slide talks about the geographic dispersion of those projects by region and then the number of locations served by type, challenges, so just different data on the program.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Seeing that nice, pretty picture of the Alexandria area in their lakes reminds me of a question. One of the providers up there, I think it was last year, made the news by offering, I think it was a $5 or $10 premium or bounty on pocket gophers. They were saying that if a gopher cuts a fiber optic cable, it's like a $1,200 repair bill to go out and patch it together. How big a problem is that with the cable we have underground?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, Ms. Dickinson and I were actually at the Minnesota Association of Townships annual meeting in November and talking about the gopher bounty. Yeah, when they get hungry, they'll chew on anything, I guess.
Proceed.
All right, the next slide talks about the summary of the 5 years that the program has been funded. So this map shows that projects have been awarded in all regions of the state, except notably those areas that are already served. The $105.6 million in state funds have leveraged over $146 million in private and local matching funds. 80 of the 110 projects funded in the first 4 years have been completed, and we're working to get the contracts executed for the 30 new projects that were awarded in January so that when the ground thaws, those projects can get underway. And we've had a little issue with short construction seasons the past couple of years with the late rain and the early frosts. The next slide talks about some of the partners we have in this program. And then the last slide talks about some of the trends we're seeing. And one of our responsibilities when managing this portfolio of investments is to learn from what we're doing. So given the many unique situations that exist in the remaining areas of the state that need improvements, we know we will need a variety of solutions to get the job done. And this list is just some of the trends we're seeing develop and we'll continue to watch as these projects come fully online. Hybrid networks, next generation fixed wireless, and electric cooperative involvement are all areas where we expect to see more growth and prominence over the next year and beyond. And more pictures, and we're happy to take any additional questions that you might have.
Any questions? I think you've taken the lion's share of them so far. So, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Lean, do you have a motion for us?
Mr. Chair, thank you. I do. I move approval of the minutes from February 24th.
Representative Lean moves approval of the minutes. Is there any discussion to that motion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative. All right. I have next up Bill Eccles. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bill Eccles. I'm the president and CEO of BevCom. We are a family-owned. I'm fourth generation as an internet service provider. Four generations ago, we weren't doing internet. But. today, BEPCOM was started in 1895 as a telephone company serving just a few rural communities in Minnesota. Today, BEPCOM serves 22 communities in Minnesota. We have another five in Wisconsin and all the farms kind of in between these communities that we serve. We have nine local offices with 105 employees, and BEPCOM provides broadband voice video services to our customers in addition to managed IT, cybersecurity, and various business telephony options. Our company's plant today is roughly 40% dedicated fiber to the customer, the farm, the business. We offer broadband speeds up to 1 gigabit and have a low income program to help those qualifying customers. It's our goal to get to 100% of our subscribers on a dedicated fiber optic connection within the next 9 years. Since 2015, and including the three grants that we have were awarded in this last 2019 broadband grant cycle, BEPCOM has had a total of 12 grants. These grants are funding projects, a total value of $9.5 million. Of this, 43% has been funded by the Minnesota Border-to-Border Grant Program, with BEPCOM paying for the other 57%. This has allowed BEPCOM to bring a dedicated fiber optic connection to 1,243 unserved and underserved rural homes, businesses, and farms. This grant program is helping to fill in the hardest-to-reach customers, the most expensive customers, the customers that, without this program, would not have access to that connected world. Minnesota's had great success to date with this broadband grant program. The Office of Broadband Development has done an amazing job administering this program and ensuring the grant funds are going towards projects which really do serve the unserved and underserved customers. If I have any criticism of the grant program, it's been, with the exception of the 2019 and 2020 programs, it's only been funded for 1 year at a time. While I don't think the state will need to run a broadband grant program forever, funding both years of a biennium helps those of us who are building broadband into these hardest to serve areas the ability to plan multi-year projects. It allows those of us utilizing the program to take a longer look into the future and find the most efficient way to utilize the grant dollars. I also believe this bill is necessary to help move the needle towards a faster goal of reaching the Minnesota state broadband goal. We in the provider community understand these grant dollars belong to the taxpayers. The dollars of this program need to be treated with the utmost respect and utilized in the most efficient manner, which will allow facilities to be built one time. Expanding the funding beyond a single year at a time helps achieve this and helps us bring Minnesota closer to 100% broadband coverage. Thank you for the opportunity to testify this afternoon, and I'm happy to stand for questions.
Any questions, members? Thank you.
Thank you.
Terry Nelson is next on my list. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Terry Nelson. And I am the general manager of Woodstock Communications, and we are based out of Ruthin, which is down in Pipestone County. And I'd like to thank you all for this opportunity to come in and talk about something that I'm very passionate about, which is broadband and getting broadband out to rural Minnesota. Woodstock Communications was started back in 1942 by my grandfather, and he started it in, of course, Woodstock. Over the years, he expanded to serve traditional telephone service to the five communities of Ruthin, Holland, Garvin, Russell, and Woodstock. In 2007, we started a complete overbuild of all five of those exchanges, bearing fiber to each of our customers, both in town and rural, providing all, we had 1,000 customers at the time, providing all 1,000 of them with the latest technology in broadband and telephony services. Since that time, we have focused on expansion and bringing broadband to areas that currently have little or no broadband services at all. Today, we have grown to 13 employees. We're serving roughly 2,500 broadband customers, hoping to be at around 3,000 by the end of this year. We serve in Pipestone, Murray, Lincoln, Lyon, and parts of Cottonwood counties. We use both fiber to the home And we also have deployed a fixed wireless solution in some of the more remote areas like you guys had mentioned a little bit ago. For starters, I would like to say thank you for all of you that had supported the previous years of grant funding and for supporting the biennium that has helped us a lot in planning. We have been the recipients of grant rounds in the past. In 2017, we did receive a grant to bring fiber to the home gigabit services to Westbrook in Cottonwood County. And then we did, in 18, we received two grants. One was to bring fiber gigabit services to the town of Ballaton. And then we also received a grant to bring a hybrid fiber wireless solution to Western Pipestone County, which is in some parts of that county are very rural. This year's grant rounds, we had applied for two communities. They were both two towns to bring fiber in, which we were turned down because of a challenge process that was brought by another provider. And another reason, I believe, was just the amount of funding dollars that was requested by all the companies far exceeded the amount that was available this year with, I believe there was close to $80 million requested, 23 available. The communities we have brought these services to with the help of the grant have been huge successes. They've seen growth, development, and I have many examples of this, and just two I'll quick share with you. One is in the town of Ballaton, the Ralco Industries, which has been in the news a lot with the True Shrimp farms that they had looked at building. Ballaton was in fear of losing this business, which is a huge part of the town this business is, because of the lack of quality broadband in town. They no longer have this fear, and Ralco is continuing to grow and be a large provider of quality jobs, not only in the town, but in the whole area. Another example is in the town of Westbrook, where Westbrook was losing families because of job opportunities, because of the lack of broadband. There was an employee that had worked for Esurance and had to move to Sioux Falls because of the lack of broadband in the town. Now that we've brought broadband into town, he's able to move back, bring his family back to Westbrook, and they are enjoying the comforts of small town living. The communities that are left without this broadband and the areas that are left without broadband are really struggling in a lot of ways. They're not able to attract or even keep the existing businesses that they have. And the same with the families. They're hard to keep the families and attract new families. Without funding these programs, it is extremely difficult to build out to these areas, as we've been talking about. And these areas are going to be left without services they need to be growing in vibrant communities. So I urge you to support this bill and help bring broadband, help us and other providers bring broadband out to these communities. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I again say thank you for this opportunity, and I will stand for questions.
Representative DeMint.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your testimony. Question for you, can consumers afford the monthly fees for the gigabyte service?
Mr. Nelson.
Mr. Chair, Representative
Damath. Just remember, Namath Damath.
Got it, thank you. You know, most of the customers that are going on a gigabit service would be a business. We have very few residential customers that actually use a gigabit service today. The rates, you know, we have different rates depending on, you know, different areas, but most of the customers that take gigabit services are a business that really need that.
Thank you. And a follow-up, Mr. Chair? Thank you. Mr. Nelson, also, are we using taxpayer dollars to provide that high-end service for maybe kind of over what an average customer wouldn't need? I know you talked about the business piece of it, but.
Mr. Nelson.
Mr. Chair, and Representative Damath, when you say using tax dollars, are you talking grant-wise?
Yes.
Yes. In, you know, communities such as Ballaton, yes, we do have a few customers in there that are using the service. We have used some of the grant funding to help build that project.
Thank you, sir. Yes. Nothing further.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Vince Robinson. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Vince Robinson. I'm the owner and president of Development Services Incorporated in Ivanhoe, Minnesota, and I serve as the executive director of the Lincoln County Enterprise Development Corporation, which is a nonprofit funded by the local units of government, providing services to entrepreneurs, businesses, and communities throughout Lincoln County. I'm pleased to be the chair and to represent here today the Minnesota Rural Broadband Coalition. We have several of our members in attendance today. And as you can see, if you picked up one of our fact sheets that were in perhaps in your packet, but are certainly in the back of the room, our coalition is made up of more than 90 organizations, all listed on here, representing a broad cross-sector of statewide and community interests, such as local governments, education, agriculture, Main Street businesses, manufacturing, healthcare, cooperatives, broadband providers, and many more. As you know, rural Minnesota is the backbone of our state with its rolling hills, many lakes, and thousands of acres of farmland, grassland, and timber. It is sought out by millions for its diverse recreational amenities, cultural heritage, geographical significance, points of interest, and much more. Unfortunately, rural Minnesota is also where the most economically disadvantaged counties are in our state. We know that if we plan to grow and prosper in our rural areas, we will need to do it by accessing markets that are outside of our boundaries. In today's world, the only way we can do that is by having accessible, reliable, and affordable high-speed internet. We need this not only for our businesses, but also for our residents and families. Our students that live far from school need it to complete their homework. I serve on a local hospital board, and I can tell you that changes in healthcare delivery will require that our elderly and sick will need broadband to receive the healthcare they need. Our telecommuter workers need it to be able to work from home. Our farmers need it to run their technology-charged farming operations, and our local governments need it to provide emergency services and other resources. We appreciate the work of Representative Eklund on this issue and the many other members of the House who are supporting the border-to-border broadband grant program. We'd also like to thank Chair Pawlowski for hearing this important bill and for highlighting the rural broadband during the House of Representatives mini session this fall. Thank you. In 2018, the Governor's Broadband Task Force recommended $70 million per biennium to keep us on track to meet our statutory speed goals. Last year's $40 million investment was a big step in the right direction, but as you know, left a $30 million gap in funding. House File 3029 would close that gap and fully fund the grant program for the first time in state history. We know the need is out there. With $20 million available for grants this last year, the Office of Broadband Development received applications totaling $70 million for broadband infrastructure projects. This remaining unavailable $50 million would have been matched by over $59 million in matching funds from project partners. So we left a lot of money on the table. And we left a lot of people unserved that could have been served. Most of these unfunded requests, and we've talked a little bit about this, came from some of the hardest to reach areas of the state where people remain unserved. Comparisons are often made between broadband expansion today and the electrification of the countryside in the 1930s, and that couldn't be truer. Both then and now, there are significant portions of the state, especially low-density rural areas, which lack access to broadband services with no practical way to get them. The business case just isn't there for private providers to justify investing all on their own. In response, in 2013, you created the Border to Border program. Thank you for doing that, which is now known across the nation as the Minnesota model, which you heard earlier, and it is the premier program of its kind in this country. program requires a public-private partnership that addresses unserved parts of the state head-on by targeting grants to rural areas that are lacking sufficient funding and also lacking the ability to do it on their own with local funds. Just 20 years ago, most people considered access to high-speed internet as a want or a luxury. Our world has changed so drastically and so rapidly that what was that short time ago a want now is a need. We now need broadband to stay connected to each other, to do business, to grow our food, to educate our children, and to deliver our health care. Broadband has become an inextricable part of our everyday lives, and all of our citizens are entitled to it. On behalf of our coalition, we ask that you support House File 3029 and provide the $30 million in additional funding this year, and that you continue this level of funding each year to close the funding gap and ensure stable funding for the grant program in the future. Thank you, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you have.
Thank you. Members? Any questions? Representative Sol?
I have no clue whether you're the right person to ask this question, but it has come upon me because you were talking about something that went past this topic. Are we leaving places orphaned as we are building out with the methodology that we're using to award grants and that sort of thing? Are we leaving orphaned things behind that are going to be extraordinarily expensive and, by any definition or imagination, unprofitable to later come back and clean up?
Mr. Robinson?
Mr. Chair, Representative, thank you for the question. Are there holes out there in the service territories? Yes, there are. Is this a perfect program? No, it is not. It is a very good program. And in the future, we may need to come to you to ask for some modifications to this program. At this point in time, as you can see, we have a considerable amount of demand for the program as it currently is. In the future, you know, as Ms. Dickinson commented earlier, there are areas that are going to continue to be extremely difficult to serve, and we may have to look at other alternatives besides the 50% match in order to accomplish that.
Representative,
just to be clear, I'm mostly interested in places that may have we have developed past that, for whatever reason, weren't able to get into a connection system. Possibly they couldn't accumulate the community decision. They just couldn't bring the the self-will to actually, but that later on, it is going to get much worse for them to get included in a installation as it would go by.
Mr. Robbins.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we are doing all that we can to encourage companies to expand their territories, to build out, if you will, as they receive grant funds and look at their business models. Again, we would have to look at each individual area like that to determine what's the best option for them. There is no one-size-fits-all or one cure that will cure everyone when it comes to those communities that are sliding through the cracks. Maybe they're on borders between service providers. Maybe they just happen to have a service provider that's not interested in doing anything, but other service providers are interested in coming up near them. We have to figure that out as we move along. So for right now, we have a lot of demand for the program as it is. Again, in the future, we're going to have to address those issues, and we're going to have to find ways to help those folks.
Thank you. Very wise answer.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank
Next
you.
On the list is Mark Bell. Oh, I'm sorry. Did you have a question? Representative Lean has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the question I asked earlier about the wireless internet option, I mean, is that something that could help this in a more cost-effective manner? I understand there can be connectivity issues, broadband or bandwidth issues as more people go online. But, I mean, is that a way we could address some of this in a more cost-effective manner?
We are, Mr. Chair, Representative, we are seeing technologies improve at all times, and perhaps those technologies will be available to best serve those communities and individuals in the future. At this point in time, line of sight is a big thing for wireless services. We, you know, in some of our most hardest to reach areas, of course, geography plays a big impact on that. So whether it's wooded or whether it's hilly areas, you know, some of those are just difficult to serve with the technologies we have today. Hopefully in the future we'll find those technologies that will be both practical and affordable for those people.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for that answer. That's very informative. All appreciate right. that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ross. All right. Next on the list. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the community. Mark Thell, I currently serve as Farmers Union president for Carlton County. We also farm, we grow grass-fed beef, pork, and chicken. And I would like to describe the internet services on our farm as if you imagine the interstate highway out here. Everybody wants to be on it going 70 miles an hour, and we want to get on it and we want to go. We currently have CenturyLink, and we have still have the copper wires from the house to the road, so we have the ability to have Wi-Fi, and that ability allows my son to go in and hook up cameras in our calving sheds, in our livestock areas, so he can be driving down the road and click on his smart device, and he can see, hey, somebody better get out there, that cow's going to drop a calf, you need to be there. So that is where technology is great for agriculture. It's also great for our rural industries to be able to have those speeds, but I describe that not as the interstate. It's still a two-lane road until we get the fiber component done to it. Then whatever the grandchildren and the next successors are on that property, they will have access to that. If it's okay with you, I'd like to describe a story from Ole and Lena. My friend over here said it was okay that you sometimes enjoy those. So in the farming community, Ole and Lena decide to make a change of life, and they buy this farm, and they move on to the farm, and things are going pretty good. Ole's getting to know the community, and Lena's getting the greenhouse all set up, and her business plan is working. And the three of their triplets are really struggling because the cell phone, the broadband, everything they have, what we have in the countryside sometimes is what we call our silo internet. So like the one testifier was talking about, when the wind blows and the leaves are moving around too much, the signal strength goes down. And I call that, you have to upload at bicycle speeds. And that gets very frustrating. And also the bigger component of that time is we know exactly what happens when you leave here today at 4 or 5 o'clock. You go down, you're trying to get onto the expressway out here, and the red one light says red, you wait your turn, the next one will blink you, and we have to manage all those traffic. So that's going on, and Ole is getting to know all of the people in his neighborhoods, and they all have, they're really proud of their farm and their life, their rural lifestyles, and they have signs. They'll have Apple Hill Farms. They have all these neat names. So he's trying to mediate the situation with all of his family members and coax them along. And then he's recognizing, you know, he can't solve this problem on his own. So, but he's a great woodworker. So he goes down and he goes into his cabinet shop and he makes a sign. And he puts the sign up and he brings them all down. And of course, what he puts on the sign, the name of their farm, is Broadband Belly Acres. And that's kind of what I think most of the testifiers are here about today, is how do we come up to speed with, I do believe there's, in our rural areas, Carlton County, that what I talked about, the silo internet, the dairy farms are there that are gone, those towers are only up, a lot of them, the old style ones, the silos were 50 feet. If we can come up with some funding sources to do some matching, part of my role as county commissioner is working with our economic development, that you know, if we can work with some of these, we have a company called Superior Air Fiber. There's companies out there, but we just have to be able to come up with some assistance to them to get these cables to a tower where we can broadcast and serve the need. And then the big part of that is economic development, because home values, you can't sell a home today if you don't have internet access. A lot of our people have to telecommunicate today. If you don't have it, that property value is less. And to keep our rural properties valuable, having access is one of the paramount things that we need today. Again, everybody out there on the road traveling 70 miles an hour, access, uploading technology, going forth with businesses, farmers need it for, my favorite thing to do on there is tractor hose. You know, when we're looking for a piece of equipment, we have to go on there to find our parts, the availability. The world is, it's not just go down to the local dealer anymore and find these things. It's things are out there that you can find that you can't get through the local dealers. And those, the farm business aren't there as much anymore today. So improvements in that information transfer so we can be on time every day is paramount. So thank you. And any questions?
No questions. Thank you.
Okay.
And be careful of those jokes. Dan Larson. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, members, Dan Larson, representing Minnesota rural counties today. We're 34 counties in greater Minnesota, the only organization that advocates specifically for rural county concerns. And I have an Ole and Lena joke too, but there's no way I'm telling that story in this group. So we appreciate Representative Eklund bringing this bill forward and appreciate the opportunity to make the case in support of the bill. We appreciate as well very much the recognition the legislature has put into this issue over time. You're recognized as leaders in the nation nationally on the support that you're giving this issue. So you should be proud of that. Last year, legislature gave $40 million in the first to the Office of Broadband for these grants, and it's the first year out of the seven that there were consecutive years of funding. That was a step in the right direction. This bill takes the next step, and it funds the statewide goal going forward with $30 million in each fiscal year. Now, there's one minor suggestion that we would have on that point, and that is we're wondering how you will, if it's in, how you would hold future legislatures to that number. So if it's the intent of the author or the legislature to fund that goal, we would suggest taking a look at moving it into the base of the Office of Broadband until the job is done. So we like the bill because it provides the intent of certainty that the state will stay dedicated to reaching those goals. And but we're concerned because we are approaching, if we're not already in the red zone for funding adequate access to the toughest parts of the state. It's a good bill because it tells those businesses, schools, local governments, and hospitals who are in the dark side of the digital divide, we're not going to forget you. I don't have to tell anybody in this panel or in the room what it means to be connected in a world that runs on gigabytes. Most of us don't have to worry about it because we have access, but I'd like you to think for a moment about those that don't. Our group has provided over the course of the last couple of years profiles of people that are unfortunately in that that situation. And we send them around. You may remember them. They look like this. And it's got the Office of Broadband stuff on the bottom, but we put personal profiles on the top. This one is of Jerry and Steph Palman. They're of Plato, Minnesota. They're a young farming family, the kind that you want in your area. School districts, they've got kids in the school district. They're young and up and coming. He runs a farm, and he also has a seed business. But he calls his service that they get from a legacy provider a nightmare because it's too slow to deliver even basic email and file transfer. So he's running a farm and a seed business. And whatever those young kids are watching, and you know, you got that going on. Or you might be a guy like Eric Clint, and Eric is a Wilkin County commissioner who operates an aerial applicator service, Wilkin County. So he needs to watch weather and keep track of planes in three different states. And he's tied to a satellite service that blinks on and off when the weather turns. So talk about frustrating and dangerous. We support this bill because it addresses people like this, people that we don't want to leave behind and people that are in that red zone in the kind of stories that you're hearing today. So appreciate your past concern, encourage you to stay bold on this issue and until all areas of the state can be adequately served and until we can reach state goals. So, Mr. Chair, that's my testimony.
Thank you.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Any questions? Thank you. I have one more, Brent Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Brent Christensen, and I'm the president and CEO of the Minnesota Telecom Alliance. We represent 44 rural broadband providers, including Mr. Eccles and Mr. Nelson. There's one piece of this that we haven't talked about yet, and it came out of a meeting you and I had at the beginning of last session when you said that you hear from people that you never hear from the people that say thank you, that get the grants. You hear from the ones that don't get the grants. But there's another piece of this that I came to say thank you about. Last session, you passed a bill called Telecommuter Forward. And that bill, Representative Sandstead was the chief author of that, and many of you were signed on as co-authors. That bill is important because it is allowing communities to designate and apply to deed to be designated as a telecommuter forward community so that they can market themselves and so that we can diversify the economy in greater Minnesota. And I think it was important for me to come up here and talk to you about that today and say because of the work that you did last session and the process worked and we passed the bill, we're going to be able to get more diverse economy in greater Minnesota. I'm happy to report it isn't public knowledge till about right now, but there are 20 communities in the state of Minnesota that have applied to deed for the telecommuter forward status. It's 8 counties, 11 cities, and 1 township. So this process is helping that. This grant program is going to work with that, diversify the economy in greater Minnesota, and because of the work that you've done here. So I just want to say thank you. And with that, I'd be happy to stand for questions.
Any questions, members? As I said at the beginning of the hearing, we're going to hold House File 3029 until we get a target. So, Representative Eklund, do you want to end with a summary?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members. Thanks for patiently listening. As you can tell, this rural broadband issue is a critical issue to the state of Minnesota. Last year, there's $20 million available for the grants. There was approximately $79 million application, so we can see that there's plenty of work left to be done. And I appreciate you considering this bill and look forward to it moving forward when we get the proper permission, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Beckman. And with that, oh, I'm sorry, Representative Anderson.
Thanks again, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to bring up the topic again about this being an ongoing expenditure. If that's the intent of the author to make this part of base funding, because if it's not, we can't bind a future legislator to spending. So I just would like a clarification as to, I'm not necessarily against it, but just wondering if that's your intent, and will this become part of base funding?
Representative Eck.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, that is my intent. It's obviously after looking at the bill a little more closely, we got to do a little fixing up on it before the next stop.
And Representative Anderson, that's another reason to hold it over. We can't get a target until it's clear what this bill does. So, we may have an amendment to correct the language. I think we will when we bring it back up. Any further questions? Seeing none, with that, meeting is adjourned.